to advertise, email podcast@thisismatchy.com.
Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Matt G.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to it. It's another special edition of Podcast and Chill. We're coming at you live from Orthodox in Ilova,
yeah, man.
You see, I'm taking this nigga to places he's never been here.
Yeah, oh, I've never been here before, man. But you do brought me here.
Don't speak too soon. Oh, so he did bring you here.
Yeah, second time here, but he brought me here.
So he broke the virginity, actually.
Yes. He
an
broke my virginity.
Orthodox introduction, nevertheless. Sorry about that. That's my bad.
Please welcome the king of Cape Town rap, youngster CP Tay.
Oh, yeah.
Bro, is that like a real thing? You're the king of Cape Town rap.
I mean, it's a big title to live up to.
Yeah.
But I just feel like in the last 10 years that you've mentioned Cape Town music in general, my name would come up the most. And nobody has ever said the words Kaapstad Naya together. No one has ever named themselves something something CPT ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I have a whole list of accolades that I'm the first of.
Yeah.
So I think that is why they would refer to me as the king, only because the pioneer status comes with my name.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, if you look at it, when rappers in Joburg release, they've got a market, they've got a fan base, they've got an audience already that is hungry for hip-hop.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
That's the only difference. And then when I released in 2010... I had to create a market.
So there wasn't?
There was, but they didn't know what to spend their money on, so the money was leaving our city.
Oh.
So if someone came from Joburg to perform, let's say a Double HP, sure, a Lockenville, we'd go see that.
Yes,
but
yes.
If Youngster CBT gonna have a show, and maybe me and like eight other local rappers, you're not gonna give a fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
You understand? So we had to create a demand to make people say, no, look here. Mm. Look at us. Look what we're doing. Turn your eyes in our direction and open your wallets to these men, because they are from your city. They're speaking about your story. This is your life. This is your surroundings that we represent and are trying to showcase and sell to the world. So, you know, directed over here. I think the Unfood also kind of fucked things up.
Yeah, we'll get into the Unfood later.
You know what I mean.
But I want to ask you, before you were the king, who was the king?
I think Cape Town was also very very group orientated in terms of hip hop.
Okay.
If you look at it, it's Prophets of the City,
yes,
four members.
Yes.
A Brasifani Cup, five members or eight members. A Godessa, two members.
Godessa,
a Black Noise, three, sorry.
Three member Godessa.
Black Noise, also a collective, but five or six guys.
3 months Cup.
3 months Cup, four Owens.
Yeah.
You know? So if you look at it, we've thrived of groups.
Oh.
In Cape Town.
It was never an individual.
You're
the first one, bro.
No, I'm not, but it's just like in terms of our generation.
Yeah.
And our moment as the present, you know, who's kind of occupying the space and music industry in Cape Town. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm the one.
Yeah. Tell me about your journey on becoming the king of Cape Town rap, because I never knew about you until there was a buzz in Joburg. Like,
Definitely.
You got to check out Youngster CPT.
Yeah.
Like, the raps are crazy.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Agonizing. Tiring. Difficult. Fucking, nauseating, draining, sickening. Like, that is what the journey was.
That sounds like my life, bro.
Still. Ancient change. Nah, like, that first 5 years, you must understand, I migrated to Johannesburg 2015.
Mm.
That first 5 years, 2010 to 2015, that's just me, like, shooting in the dark, yeah? That's just me throwing at the dartboard blindfolded. Like, maybe it hits, maybe it doesn't.
Mm.
You know? This is me testing the waters. This is also me rapping in a different accent for the first 3 years. I went with the American style.
Yeah,
oh, for real.
Accent,
I went with the American style.
And you were still Youngster CPT.
Still Youngster CPT. So I'm still talking about Cape Town. I'm still rapping about that hood shit. I'm still like representing the city.
Wait, let me hear your American accent, bro.
Yeah.
I let me give you one of these lyrics. There was this one I did for Stogie. I did the Freestyle Friday for him and actually rapped the verse that I did in 2010.
Yeah.
Now, listen to that.
Yeah.
In 2020, I rapped a verse from 2010. And motherfuckers was blown away. Like, yo, what fucking song is this? What fucking song is this, bro? Okay, yeah, it goes like this. Yeah, legend has it, a rapper shall rise from the ashes while you rest on the day of Sabbath. Dark like a fused light, I can't see the right, the honest life. I'm small, but then again, so is a pocket knife. No end to the ever continuous raw lyricist, inconspicuous, pointing out your differences. I am not him, I do not sing. I will chop him and send you to the chop shop with weaponry to SWAT God. Strike disaster, the rapper slasher, the party crasher. Hot shit, volcano man. Magma, devouring MCs, the pen bleeds when I connect these letters, sounds, phrases, and nouns. The whole truth and nothing but it. The wildest place in Africa is where they slumming. Fuck it, not Ratanga Junction.
Hey! Oh, Ratanga!
So I mean, that's what that sounded like.
For real?
Jeez. For like, bro, for wow, like 2 years straight.
Yeah.
I just rapped like that.
Yeah.
And because you must understand, I'm obviously being trained by TV and radio.
Yeah, like everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah. So the learning is obviously coming from what I'm exposed to every day coming home from school, or listening to it in the club, or we're playing it in the car, or you know, it's background music, but it's always Western. It's hardly local. I knew about Reddy D and I knew about Black Noise, and that's because they did outreach programs. So Heal the Hood, the Hip Hop Indaba. I mean, Emil even went as far as bringing the whole hip hop experience to the school, like coming to the school, teaching you how to do the B-boy steps. They called it the six step at that time, and he was doing that after hours at school. That's in his spare time.
Bro.
So Cape Town has a lot of these activists, like hip hop activists. Like, I'm not saying Joburg don't have it, but I think that once you get into the music industry and you monetize it, you don't necessarily look back as to, okay, what do we need to do for the place that we come from, that we hail from, you know? Whereas a lot of the Cape Town guys, because those places don't have as many success stories coming out of it, we feel guilty. It's like survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
You feel ashamed that you made it and you are 1% out of like 100 and no one else did.
Yeah.
So you're always constantly going back. Are you always trying to like rebuild? You're trying to like redistribute that wealth because you know it's not going to be done by anyone else other than you, because you understand the needs and the constraints of the community. You know,
You know, when I listen to music, bro, I'm like, this guy 20 years ago, right? He probably would have been, okay, not even 20, maybe 50 years ago, would have been a freedom fighter, bro. Because this guy is always preaching, bro, through your raps.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I'm right in saying that, ne?
100%.
Is that a conscious decision?
Definitely.
Yeah.
The crazy thing was, in the beginning when I was doing the American accent rap, the content was still the same.
Mm. Yeah, like this verse, you just
you could hear.
Yeah.
The content was still the same. It's always been very thought-provoking, very conscious. Like, I'm always leading you into the right direction, but it's the road nobody wants to lead you down. You know, you're supposed to go down this road, you're supposed to know these truths, you're supposed to hear these realities, but nobody ever told it to you. No one ever said it. So I'm just the guy that says the shit that no one else wants to say. I'm the one that pulls the plaster off over the hair. Have you ever put a plaster on hair?
Painful.
That shit hurts me, bro.
Yeah.
But sometimes you need to rip that motherfucker off instead of prolonging it and giving it its dues. Fuck that. Pull it off, feel the pain, and afterwards numb the pain, nurse the pain, lick the wounds, whatever the case may be. But I'm kind of here to like open that curtain up so wide that when the sun shines into your eyes, you're almost blinded by it. But you need to let the sun shine in, bro.
Bro, I want you to give me the background according to you of Cape Town, you know, how we are where we are now. Because the first time I went to Cape Town was like, it was the first party we did. When was it? A year ago?
Oh, damn, for real?
Yeah.
Wow.
And when I got there, bro, the racism, I was like, whoa, this is crazy.
Cape Town is a special, it's a special kind of racism. It's fantastic. It's rich in protein and nutrients.
It's perfect.
It has been cooked to perfect. Like that.
It's perfect.
Because the white people in Joburg just mind their business, you know.
They even learn languages that they're not supposed to. They're like, hey, should I better learn some of those Zulu and Xhosa?
Yes.
Well, these motherfuckers are going to fuck me in my sleep out here. You can see. They at least pick up some things to survive. The tactics, bro.
Yeah.
Cape Town.
You.
And it's perfect. And like the other races, it's like they know their place.
Oh,
you talk to them about it, they're like, don't go there.
Yeah. No, that's how it is. Very sad to have a place of that kind of beauty
It's beautiful.
Be kind
stunning.
Of with so much ugliness.
Yeah. Yeah. Be kind of like stunted in growth because of something like racism.
Yeah.
Like that's the last thing you'd want it to be. Maybe it could have been politics or corruption or so. I'd have taken that shit.
Yeah.
You know? But we must always, guys, understand when we are speaking about the history of South Africa, number one, it is the only country on the continent that is named after a destination.
Sure.
Let's just clarify this. It's a destination. We did not get our freedom. We did not get our democracy when we should have, and it shows. They couldn't come up with a name for the place.
It's a geographical location.
Thank you. It's a compass bearing, for God's sake.
Literally, yeah.
So that's number one. There are a lot of cultures and races and creeds of people that were here, that were enslaved here. There were slaves that were brought here. If you look at it, it's just one big smorgasbord, melting pot, disaster waiting to happen, you know? And then you're going to sprinkle in a colonialism, slavery, racism, apartheid, segregation into an already, you know, ticking time bomb.
True.
A recipe for disaster. So that's number one, okay? The entry point into our continent is Cape Town. Think of it. When these settlers
arrived. It's not Venda.
Hell no. When these guys arrived on ships,
they
entered at the Cape of Good Hope, my man.
Bro.
Yeah.
Salt River, areas like Salt River.
And it was just black people.
There we go. Salt River, Woodstock, that whole marine drive, almost Atlantic seaboard side where you see the waterfront and all that shit, almost that, just picture it a non-existent. And that is the landing point for your colonizer. That's where he sets foot first, you know? And obviously finding indigenous people there, the previous battle that took place is in 1510 that nobody speaks about. We all know 1652. Jan van Riebeek, the Dutch East India, VOC, blah, blah, blah. What we don't realize is that 100 years prior to that, there was a battle that took place that they lost in 1510.
Yes.
I think these were Spanish settlers, if I'm not mistaken. But word got out that, yo, if you go to South Africa, or let's say whatever place it was called at the time, if it didn't have a name, these people will fucking kill you. They're not playing around, because apparently, you know, the folk story goes that one of the settlers that arrived in 1510 tried to kidnap a black kid to take him with.
Sure.
Kind of like to take him home, almost like a sculpture. Like,
a souvenir. Seen this? A souvenir.
Like a keyring, yeah. Bro. Yeah. Just to hang out. Yeah. Definitely, yeah. Souvenir, all that shit. So that is how the battle then ensued, because obviously one of the, you know, the villagers were like, hey, where's my kid? Huh? What's my kid doing?
Mm.
You know? And then this whole, you know, this whole conflict takes place, and the settlers are kind of like chased back onto their ship, and they sail away because they're like, shit, we actually can't rule. We can't take this over. Or let's say we can't take it over so easily.
Yes. It won't be a walk.
It's not going to be a pushover. You know,
yeah.
You know, it's not going to be a walk in the park. Yeah. So they come back 100 years later, armed to the teeth.
So they
come back 100 years later, like with guns.
Damn.
There was no guns on that first trip. But when they came back, they were like, okay, now these people are advanced. They got spears. They got agriculture. They got land. They got families.
Beautiful land.
They seem to have a lot going for them.
Yeah.
So the only way we're actually going to take it from them is by force.
And now back at home, it's fucking cold.
Indeed.
There's nothing.
You must think about what they come from.
Nothing grows. It's cold.
They've never seen this kind of rich land and environment and these minerals and these resources that they can obviously benefit from, you know. So I wanted to start off there to bring it to the present and the current climate of Cape Town. How can you expect a place that has gone through so much turmoil and tragedy and bloodshed? Because if you look at it, we have these museums and holy grounds and statues and monuments and landmarks from a colonial regime that are still hailed and kept up and maintained in Cape Town.
Yeah,
they throw some statues down every now and again. There's like 30 more.
Yeah.
you can throw the main ones down,
yeah.
But it doesn't take away from the others that are going to stand the test of time that you might not know about because you've never been educated on that side of your history.
100%. But we know about Hitler.
We know about Hitler.
And what he used to shit and...
You know what I'm saying? Like these are all things that we've been taught. But yeah. Our own pain, our own truth, I think it's a bit too graphic to give us while we are still currently living in it. I say that because if you look at Cape Town, like you said, you went there last year, there was still racism. I speak to another black guy from Joburg, he's like, hey man, Cape Town, racist as fuck, dog. I speak to another black guy, he's like, hey man, I fucking hate it out in Cape Town, but I love the beach. They all have that thing where they first have to just get through like that first few hours of being in Cape Town, like, oh shit, I forgot, yeah, it's like this. And then only they can appreciate the beauty of it once they kind of like, you know, bypass all the negatives.
Mm.
So... the reason why I would say Cape Town is still kind of like stuck in the dark ages is because if you look at what happened in the dark ages, it's PTSD, baby.
Shit, bro.
It's trauma. These people have gone through hell, and not only have you not tried to remove them from that circumstance, you've actually almost made it worse for them in those same places. If you look at the picture of Manenberg from 1970, whatever, and look at the picture of Manenberg in 2021, it looks the same.
What?
Whoa.
Nothing is different in that place, bro. If you look at Bonteville, if you look at Heidefeld, if you look at Lavendale, if you look at Capricorn, which is a new area that emerged of just settlements and squats. If you look at those kinds of places and you take like a geographical picture of what it looked like back in the days when they moved these people there during the Group Areas Act, there's no difference.
Where are you from? Which area?
I stay in Wynberg.
In Wynberg.
Yeah, so it's like in the middle. So you get the southern suburbs and then you get the Cape Flats. So the southern suburbs is just before the Cape Flats, okay? But the southern suburbs is kind of like the condensed population all crammed into a couple of hundred kilometers or almost of each other. You know, so it's very, very, how you can say, a chock-a-block. Beside, you know, you're living right on the doorstep of commerce, of business, of transit, of schools, of malls and all that. It's like right there. And then the lush side is where your neighbor is like a couple of hundred kilometers away from you. That's the lush side. You don't have no goddamn noise. There's no buses. There's no, you know, taxis hooting and shit like that. So where I live is like that. But
Tell me which side is from the airport.
Yeah.
Because when you leave the airport, you just see shacks on the left.
No doubt, that's Khayelitsha.
That's Khayelitsha.
And then next to Khayelitsha is Mitchells Plain. And those are the two biggest suburbs in Cape Town. And those are two of the most unappreciated and just disjointed communities.
That makes no sense, because I'm thinking when Obama lands, the first thing he sees is Khayelitsha.
Yeah.
Shouldn't it be at least...
And Mitchell's Plain is where hip-hop started, by the way.
Mm.
I don't know if you're ready to have that conversation yet. South Africa. I don't know if he's ready to admit that yet.
Yeah.
But these legends that I spoke of prior, the Emil of Black Noise and the Ready D, was based in Mitchell's Plain. And Prophets of the City, many of the members hail from Mitchell's Plain. And that's actually where the first hip-hop music... and the culture of hip-hop, I'm talking about b-boying, graffitiing, MCing, and DJing. I'm not talking about rapping. There's a difference there. I'm not talking about just the one side of it. I'm talking about the actual art form that is called hip-hop. The elements.
Even graffiti.
Even the graffiti. All of that took place in Mitchell's Plain, bro. Mm. And which is next to Khayelitsha. Mm. Which is why I think those two communities are... so, I wouldn't say unified, but I would say the stance that they have for each other and the integration, the amount of black people that can speak Afrikaans, and not savor Afrikaans, who's wit mens, but Afrikaans, like colored people speak.
Yeah.
Like, they're able to speak that in Khayelitsha. Mm. They're able to understand in Khayelitsha. We listen to the same music if you're in Khayelitsha and Mitchell's Plain.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So, I would say that those two communities play a big role in Cape Town, but they are kind of like the biggest areas where the most people of color were shifted and moved and left to die, you can say, you know. And they've actually managed to, they've turned their populations into markets and consumers, where they're actually creating businesses in Khayelitsha, in Mitchell's Plain. They've built malls, they have little, you know, house shops, community-based.
There's a mall in there.
There's malls
there.
There's an
economy, bro. They when you drive malls, past, you're like, hey, I'm not going here.
There are malls out there. So, I mean, in that way, they've at least managed to sustain themselves and create an ecosystem of commerce and finance where it's like, okay, the money stays in our communities and it gets, you know, distributed amongst our people and so forth. So I would say there's opportunities emerging, you know. But if you look at the past, you have to understand why the future is the way it is.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me about gangsterism, bro, because we don't have gangs in Joburg, bro. Do you know ever?
We have criminals.
Yeah.
We don't have like gangs that, you know, ravage businesses and now just they're in their own little pocket. It's not like.
How does gangsterism come in Cape Town? I blame it on Tupac, eh? Tupac fucked it up.
Never ever blame Pac for that shit. You have to blame the same people that took your ancestors and hung them from trees, bro.
Shh.
That's who you must blame for that shit.
For gangsterism.
In Cape Town, I'm not talking about the city, I'm talking about the actual CBD that's called Cape Town.
Sure.
On top there. Woodstock, by Boekop and Along Street, Free Street, Kloof Street, all those places, okay? If you look at that side and then you move further to just before Woodstock and the highway and shit, at the area District 6, you've heard about it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was about to say, hey, Mac, I'll walk off this motherfucker right now if you say no. No, I'm joking. Yeah. So the area District 6 and the other districts that followed, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, those were inhabited by people of color only.
Okay.
Majority.
Yeah.
So apparently there was white people and Jews that lived there as well, but majority was black colored.
Okay.
Crazy. Living in harmony. Existing. Wow. Coexisting. Oh. Businesses next to each other. Houses next to each other. There's photographs of this. All black and white. There's a District 6 museum in Cape Town as well. You can actually read up about this, bro. I shot a video there called Clearlung. So in the video, I show little excerpts of what's written on the wall, all these quotes and these quotations taken from various people who lived in District 6, speaking about their experience, what it was like to get removed, what they had to do afterwards, and what they used to do before there was any apartheid and segregation. So,
oh yeah, and then the virus came.
Indeed, indeed. Yes. And that was one of the ways to obviously contain these people. But the original law, I would say, that kind of like destroyed that structure is the Group Areas Act.
Mm.
And the Group Areas Act, what it basically said was, all people inhabiting this part of the land, close to the mountain, close to the ocean, these people must be forcibly removed and placed in a segregated area, you know. Those areas obviously grew and expanded and became way bigger than what they were supposed to in the beginning initially. But you have to understand that kind of design, that kind of architecture, that is as rich as the racism is. That is how well that plan came together.
Sure.
So all those people who were living in town, like, I mean, that's the high society, like upper echelon area.
Yeah.
Think of it. My grandmother had a house there. My mother was born there.
Mm.
Most of my uncles and aunties is born in town.
Mm.
Not many people can say that in today's time. I can't say because I wasn't born in town.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But my parents and, you know, some of my other relatives were born in Cape Town, bro.
Mm.
But yet they spend their lives living in the ghettos.
Sure.
So areas like Mitchell's Plain, areas like Elsie's River, Bell Hall, Bishop Lavers.
How does this lead to gangsterism,
though? The fight for survival, because there were gangs in District 6 also. In that place of harmony and peace, there were gangs, but they were more referred to as like thugs or scullies.
Yeah.
These were guys that stood on the corner, smoked weed maybe, and when they saw an old lady came, they'd hide it.
Sure.
Petty criminals.
Sure. There we go. These were guys that when they saw something wrong being done or misjustice happening, they would intervene.
Mm.
Or these are guys that when they saw kids banging from school, they'd be like, "Hello, Jason, school to Hannah, so pay your tate." You know what I mean?
Mm.
These are guys that actually had some sort of a heart,
I would say.
Yeah. Even though they were like rebels or whatever you want to call them, they had that consciousness still of, yo, we still have to protect what is ours, and these people are ours. Once they got removed, I think this early 60s, Group Areas Act start 1964. Once they start getting removed, these thugs get put in places now that they are unfamiliar with.
Hmm.
They get removed from the communities that they were once living in. So it's different neighbors. I don't know who the fuck's living around me anymore. The areas are far from jobs. Transit at that time, obviously, it's minimal. You know, so these guys are basically living day to day, hand to mouth, and most of them are broke and poor.
Hmm.
So that anger, that frustration, that hatred that you have inside you bottled up for your oppressor now gets taken out on the closest person to you. And who is it? your neighbor.
Yeah.
And then NWA drops Fuck the Police.
I mean, you have to understand gangs are built on the same structure that political groups are formed.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Exactly the same. Thing, the only difference is one goes through politics and the other one goes through violence.
Yeah.
Most of the time, you know. And we have to understand things like Tuk and Mandrax, these drugs could not have been produced locally at that time.
Hmm.
Because who had the resource to manufacture?
Yeah, the labs and stuff.
You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? So, once drugs get put in those exact communities I speak of, once they get shifted out of where they're from and you place them in this little confined area that
Fuck
they've never been
me.
To, all you have to do now is throw a little bit of substance in this, little chemicals, and give them weaponry. And you step back, and they'll do the rest.
Self-destruct.
That is where gangsterism comes from.
Shit.
Gangsterism was only born after the Group Areas Act, after they built these huge locations for our people to live in. Gugs, Nyanga, Langa, once they built all that and placed people there, that is when gangsterism took a turn of violence. Self-inflicting.
Yo, bro.
That's where it changes. So the most conception people have is always like, oh yeah, rap music led to that. Indeed, rap music was the mouthpiece, but it was not the original cause for this. It's the government, and you must understand our government was watching the American government so closely at every tactic they were using to suppress the black community, that once they saw the projects crack the CIA, they were like, oh shit,
we can do
this. This is what we need to do.
Yeah.
And this is where the man Wouter Basson, for those of you who do a little research after you're watching this, is where the man Wouter Basson comes in, was once a general in the army who then gets reassigned to a new duty, and his duty is chemical warfare.
Dr. Death or something.
Dr. Death. Thank
Death
you, sir.
Is his nickname.
Guys out there, go research Project Coast. It's called Project Coast. That was his assignment he was given. He was given an assignment to subdue the black and colored communities. Let's just say black community because it was one.
Yeah.
And how he did it was crazy because, I mean, they went through almost every possible option they could, from poisoning water to a poison gas. Then it comes down to Mandrax, which is a sleeping tablet from India.
Shit.
That gets strengthened more. They add more to it and then distribute it for free. For free. And how they do it also, well, this was a story that I was told personally by someone who lived in District 6, but in order, I mean, this is a time before social media, newspapers, we have to take ourselves away from that. Before you could promote anything to people, a word of mouth was the most powerful, obviously.
Yeah.
If I tell you something, that's how you learn your news in those days.
Mm.
So somebody must have gone around, one of these government officials went around in the dead of night while everybody was sleeping in District 6 and just started spray painting the word Mandrax.
You kidding?
On walls. And when the residents woke up the next day, what question are you going to ask?
What is this?
Well, Mandrax, what the hell is Mandrax? A few days later, a button shows up on your doorstep. Just a small tablet. Or somebody across the road, or a guy sitting on the field, and he's got it in his hands like, yo, Nike, I'm going to try it down.
You fucking kidding me, bro?
Jeez, bro.
This is how these things were introduced, guys. You look, it is a very gloomy story. I mean, fuck, we don't want to dwell on it too long, but you ask me these things, the only way for me to explain it is to give you the facts. Obviously, I don't know everything. I'm still doing my research and learning and information and stuff like that. But from what I've gathered over the years, that's where I see it.
How crazy is the violence in Cape Town, man?
Yeah, it's insanity, bro.
For real,
it's
insanity. Bro. It's a movie.
There was an incident that took place at my mosque. Crazily enough, at the masjid. Yeah. So three guys were shot outside the mosque. One died, one was paralyzed. The one who died, I knew him, and he was at my store like a week before, and he was in prison for like 4 years before he came to my shop. And he actually showed me the picture of the first night we met each other. It was when he came out of jail, and he showed me the picture. He was like, "Yeah, no, was in Hawaii, was Abashimi Beach," and he's giving me the whole thing. He's like, "Yeah, you performed this song and that song." Yeah. And I was like, "Oh shit, I actually do remember that show." And we got to speaking, whatever the case, and he was just so happy to be free. Like I could see that look in his eyes, like he'd been in jail for a long time, and like he was out for 2 weeks, and they killed him.
Yo,
outside mosque. Coming out of his Friday prayers, That's like you walking out of church on a Sunday and someone blasts you outside.
Damn.
So, and he's not the first guy to die outside the mosque. There's many Owens.
What?
That they get outside mosque.
Bro, this is like a different country, bro.
This many Owens they get outside mosque. Only because that is the time they know you are.
You let your guard down.
You're in submission, yeah.
You're like naked.
Going down, yeah.
Yeah, because.
You know what I mean? You're going down, you're humbling yourself, there's humility. You don't have knife, it's insidious. Indeed, you have nothing. You know, you're not armed or anything like
you're
that. You're probably not coming with your security.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
you're going to be, you know, one man. And that is the kind of climate that the kids, I mean, you must think of children because these are fathers. These are uncles. These are brothers. You know what I mean? So you take that away from the child, number one, you break the household. You don't have a breadwinner anymore, or you don't have a role model, a male role model, a positive one. And the way you kill him, revenge style, execution style.
Yeah.
The lighty grows up with that
anger.
That anger.
Hardened.
And he wants revenge.
Sure.
And this is how you perpetuate that cycle of gangsterism. This is why it's been going on for so many years, yeah.
I heard a story. Tell me if this is true. This is crazy, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's shooting something. I don't know if it's a music video or something. Uh-huh. And then they broke into the production crew's car. And they took everything.
Yeah.
And then he was like, yo, no, listen, we're going to get it back. Made a couple of calls. Within an hour, he had all the stuff back.
Jeez,
true story, eh?
Gee.
What happened there?
What a G.
Like I said, Joburg is crime-based and criminal-based, and Cape Town is more organized crime-based, you know?
Mm.
So in Cape Town, there's a hierarchy. You know, every low-level guy, every low-level crook has someone that he answers to. He works for someone.
He's affiliated.
He's affiliated. There's a ranking system. And trust me, if he's out here committing crimes, he's not high up on the ranks. He can't be.
Yeah.
Because he's a foot soldier.
He's a runner, yeah.
He's a runner, you know. So the guys that do stupid shit like that, breaking cars and steal phones and snatch ladies' bags and shit, I have no problem in getting it how you live. But once you do that, in my space and my immediate safety is put in jeopardy, now I have to step in, you know what I'm saying? So, the situation got handled quite fast, actually, for us. And it was even in an area we didn't have much sources, you know? So we had to kind of like step out and do it ourselves, you know? But once word got out that it was us that did it, then all the owners was calling like, yo, you need help, you need this, you need that. And we were like, we actually managed to sort this fucking thing out ourselves without making too many phone calls.
Yeah.
Like we called like two guys to find out who it was that was running this particular pocket. You know what I'm saying? And when they told us who it was, we were like, okay, shit, we'll wait for the next move. But the next move was taking too long.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing you have to understand, once your items are on the street,
they're
starting to spread out now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's being sold to one guy who's selling it to another guy, selling it to another guy. By the time I'm maybe going to find it, it's moved 3-4 times in the last hour.
Yeah.
So the more time that passes, the harder it's going to be to track down these things. Plus, like you say, it's a production crew.
Mm.
So the amount
of white people,
it's
escape,
laptops, it's cameras,
yeah.
It's charging blocks, it's batteries, it's light. We're shooting. We're filming. This is some shit that's benefiting us. And it's gone now because of Cape Town. You know what I mean? And bro, it happened in town. In Bree Street.
Mm. Annelie got robbed in.
Not in the goddamn ghettos.
Yeah, I remember.
Not in the Cape Flats.
Yeah.
And there's a line from Mr. Devious also, rest in peace, where he says, fuck the ghettos. The whole South is rough.
Mm.
Mm.
And we have to take ourselves out of this mentality of thinking like, oh, just because I'm in the car, I'm going to get robbed.
Mm.
And just because I'm in Sandton, I'm safe.
No fucking ways,
dude.
Bro. We have to remove ourselves completely.
Bro, didn't they rob your shop during lockdown?
Correct, sir.
Bro, that breaks my heart, man.
And this is the thing, when you're opening businesses in your own community, when you're trying to create opportunities and sustainability
that hurts, bro.
For others that are around you, and you could have opened it anywhere if you wanted to. But you chose to give back to the community.
To empower.
That, you know what I'm saying? That gave you kind of your start and your boost in the beginning, you know?
I was 2 weeks ago, I was at Vilagazi, Pro Kid's brother.
Yes.
City Lights. So he opened
a
restaurant.
Pro Kid's brother?
Yeah.
He's a real brother?
Yeah,
blood brother.
Damn, can't you see him the same?
I never looked at him the same now, but I'm gonna examine his face now and I'm gonna be like, just say donkey, son? Okay, no, it's him. No, that's him. He said it and it's him. Nah, that's crazy.
So he opened up a spot like 6 months ago in Vilagazi Street. Within a month, they broke in, took everything. everything, bro.
Serious.
Our own people.
Yep. And he's trying to, you know, keep the money within the community and the employment within the community.
Yeah, why come open it in Rosebank and Melrose? They have enough shops.
Yeah.
Well, the guys got nothing. Yeah. They need you.
Mm.
And it's the thing, bro, like, this, the self-destructive pattern, the same shit I was speaking about a few minutes ago when I said, like, you place these people in hell, in the worst conditions imaginable, and then you expect them to be civilized with each other. How?
Never gonna work.
It's never gonna work. Never. You have tortured them. You have tormented their mind state to the point they don't feel, they don't feel superior. They feel like they're worthless.
Have you ever been in prison, bro?
I've been arrested.
For real?
Yeah.
For what?
But not the Cape, you know, like the one on Netflix. What's that show?
Oh, is that the most one?
Not Sonny Mongrel. What's that prison? Baltimore.
Yeah.
No, not big prison.
I had to bail people out. I had to go visit people. I had to phone people. I had to send people stuff in Baltimore. I've never been there. I don't ever plan on fucking
so
going
if it's
there.
Rough,
if you go in there right now as Youngster CVT, what's going to happen, bro?
Nothing.
Nothing? You're going to be like the king there as well?
I wouldn't go that far because I'm not going to join a gang.
You have to join 16 or...
You have to join a gang, I understand.
No, it's...
I'm 26, 27, 28.
Yes, the numbers.
The power structure in prison is crazy also because your street rep means nothing. That's why I say I'm not going to be the king.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
But because of what I stand for, my values, the cause that I'm fighting for, because on the outside, I'm speaking for the Owens on the inside.
Mm.
And that message resonates with them. My album is being listened to in jail.
For real?
At this moment.
Bars.
You're kidding me, bro.
Behind bars.
Look, they listen to everyone. They're listening to AKA, they're listening to Casper, they listen to all that shit. It's jail, bro. It's not the fucking space, you know? It's not the universe, you know? I mean, it's here on earth. And they're watching the music videos and they listen. They might watch this podcast, who knows, bro. But let me tell you, like, these guys are very, very informed. They more inform what's going on in the outside world than we are sometimes.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Because they have to obviously keep their ear to the street because some of their businesses are still running while they're inside. You know what I mean? So they'll know, okay, Youngster went to go shoot the video in this place today. Okay, he spoke to that one. Okay, that one's in the music video. Okay, cool, send me the video when it's done. And this guy will be in jail. And he'll make all that moves happen.
You didn't be anyone's wife there, in prison?
Nah.
Because you're not bad looking. I mean, look at yourself.
Thank you. I'm going to take it as a compliment. If it wasn't intended that I might get ass raped, I'll take it as a compliment nevertheless, bro. But yeah, I don't think I've come into much problems, bro. Only because I understand who my opponent would be.
Yeah.
I understand him already. I know what he's going through. I've aside from being a student of human nature, I've studied our people of color in South Africa very close.
Sure.
Because I have to write for them.
Mm.
I'm trying to sell them music. I'm selling them merchandise. I'm selling them a lifestyle. So I have to know who I'm selling to. You have to know your consumer. You know what I mean? And trust me, to know these motherfuckers, sometimes we're better off not knowing.
Okay, tell what have you learned about black people and color people?
Right.
Yeah.
Black people, I would say, are very proud.
Okay.
A proud race. The reason I say that is because you understand your identity, you understand your heritage, and you understand your... most of your history and your tribal history as well, you know, so that gives you a sense of purpose and a sense of identity. It's almost like you don't want to let your ancestors down.
Yes.
Very big on ancestors, so it means that you have a good understanding of your past. Now that is something I can fuck with. I can respect that like a motherfucker, because that is step one to self-worth, to know that you are not a slave, you are not a beghi, you are not a fucking, you know, less than, you are that, the guy you think you are, the hero, the crusader, the goddamn icon, that's who you are. That's exactly right, bro. So that's one thing I admire about black people. I kind of want to steal that from black people. I'm kind of jealous that you have them. And then the thing I learned about colored people is they have a very low self-esteem.
Wow.
I know it doesn't appear that way, but that's a defense mechanism.
But you have beautiful girls, man.
No doubt. I didn't need to learn that one. I figured that out very early. I figured that out when I was about 14 years old. That's when I lost my virginity. That's a cock rage. I know, I'm sorry. Do not do as I say or as I do.
No, he lost it when he was 10.
fucking me. He's fucking me.
I was watching Wild Room when I was 10. I was admiring the cartoons. Right? Wait, what the fuck is going on, bro? But like I just learned that they have a lot of self-confidence issues, and that comes with not knowing your history, not knowing your origin, knowing your heritage.
True.
And that is where the disconnect comes in between, well, I think, between colored people and black people, is that the one is like super proud and the one is like mega patriotic, like I'm a Zulu man, fuck you know what I mean? Oh, I'm awesome.
I'm Venda. Names of fathers. Indeed.
And they can name it and they can go down to their family tree and trace it all the way back.
Literally.
Whereas, I mean, fuck, bro. We are considered the bastard children of this nation.
Sure.
Children of rape.
Yeah.
Hectic.
How do you teach people like that that they are great?
Self-worth.
And sure. It's difficult, bro. It's not impossible. It's not impossible, but it's going to be hard. Harder.
Let's talk about the music, man.
Eish.
2015, what's going on, man? Are you landing in Joburg? What's happening?
2015, I came to Joburg with 2 suitcases and 10,000 rand. And I was dropped on Park Station from the bus. I don't know, it was the Intercape or what I took. And I made my way to Heelbro, where I was going to be staying for the next 2.5 years of my life.
Did you see Saul?
So
I know where you sang out in Hillbro.
You know exactly where you sang. I tell them where.
Thing is, Roger's Internet Cafe with Marvin fixing phones.
Okay, yeah, salute. I
used to go to the Internet Cafe. Your black and white sticker is still there.
Is it there? Salutas.
Yeah, salutas. Yeah,
salute. I used still to stick there.
Roger's on Pretoria Street.
So you know Marvin also.
I know Marvin, man. I've got his number.
That's my dream.
Rogers and them, yeah. I haven't seen him in a while. I haven't seen him in a while, but I know.
Yeah, and then Moses used to do all the little IT work for me.
Yeah.
So whenever my hard drive used to break, I'd give it to Moses. Yo, shout out to Moses, man. I actually formed quite a nice community there for myself.
Yeah.
In Heelbro when I was staying there, bro.
So you landed in Heelbro when you first came here?
Yeah. Park Station went up to Heelbro, and I stayed there for like 2.5 years. Luckily, like in the 5 years that I was in Cape Town, I'd networked. I had some phone numbers I could dial. You know what I mean? So when I came here, first people I called was Stogie. I mean, because he always had me. You know what I mean? He always had my back when he came out to Cape Town. And I can appreciate that. He had it in a time when nobody else was really looking.
Yeah.
So always fuck with Stogie and DJ Switch.
Oh, yeah.
Morgan.
He was the other guy I called when I arrived here.
Yeah.
And between the two of them, I mean, if you look at where this is leading, Stogie T, DJ Switch.
That's just the way it goes. Yeah.
So, in some sort of a crazy way, my arrival here created a collaboration for me as well that I was included in, but it also brought a new name, Nasty C. And nobody knew, well, I'm not going to say nobody, because obviously people did know who he was. But he had local fame at the time. It was more just local fame in Durban, you know, because I didn't know who he was yet, and he didn't know me either. So we both kind of got introduced to each other on that song.
Oh, for real?
Crazy. And I remember DJ Switch was actually the power plug for that.
The track, yeah.
Yeah, for that track, because he kind of actioned like and forced like, nah, Nasty C needs to be on the song.
Yeah.
So originally it was gonna be me, Stogie, and Ginger Tittle.
Oh, Ginger Trill.
And then it would have been me, Stogie, and KO. So the third rapper was always a question mark.
Yeah.
We were always trying to find the third guy to be on the song.
Yeah.
And then Switch was like, yo, why don't we just get Nasty C? And me and Stogie look at each other and like, you think he can rap with us? And he was like, okay, let me play you a song. And he takes out his phone, he plugs the aux in, and he plays Juice back.
Hey!
That's the song Switch played me.
Yo, I think that's the wrong song.
I heard the first few minutes of it. I didn't need to hear the bars. I didn't need to hear the delivery or nothing. You know what they say about music? You can tell if you're going to like it in the first 10 seconds or
for
not.
For sure.
Yes.
As soon as I heard that, man, you should hate yourself. And then when I heard the chorus, I was like, shit. Just the partnering of certain words. I'm a rapper. I write music. The partnering of certain words. Look into the mirror, nigga. Rate it yourself. Could have just said, look in the mirror, check your reflection.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As a writer, that caught my ear because I was like, shit, this guy can write. Because this is a hook, but there's still some substance in it. There's depth in the hook even.
Yeah.
Most hooks don't need to have depth.
Nah,
shit that everybody can repeat long
it's
enough.
It's the lightest part.
It's the lightest part of the goddamn song.
Yeah.
He still had something in the hook. So I was like, there's some meat on the bone.
Shit.
I like that. It means you're going to feed me. And I just heard a few lines of the verse and I was like, put him on the song.
Tell me about the track you did with Reason and who is it? It was Reason, Black Lez, Hussein. What happened there?
Oh, shit.
It's a crazy story.
Oh,
there.
Good grief. Yo, I'd wish somebody had told me where we were going to shoot that video before we shot it, but we shot in Newtown.
Yeah.
You know where the graffiti pillars are for back
in the row,
under that bridge?
Yes. With Carfax.
Thank you. Carfax, that's the name I was looking for. I mean, can we just send a location scout out? Just to suss out these venues. Before we decide if this is where we're gonna take the shot, guys, please, just everyone out there who has never shot music videos before, these young rappers, just go out, do some homework before you actually marry the decision to shoot at a certain location. So we're shooting there in Carfax. I'm looking at these guys passing us by, walking up and down. I'm a streetwise man.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the other ones. I'm like, okay, they seem relaxed about things. So maybe I'm just paranoid, because sometimes your paranoia and the shit that you've been through in life get the better of you. You keep thinking someone's listening or watching you. Whatever.
And it's not Cape Town.
So I'm like, okay, nice shit. Yeah. Maybe there's nothing to be alarmed about.
Yeah.
Upon like the third passing, I go over to one of the ones. I mean, it was the reason or who's. I was like, maybe do you notice that these niggas keep watching us here and shit? And every time they walk past, the crew gets a little bit bigger. Starts off with one guy, then three, then six, and I'm like, okay, shit, bro. Yeah, they seem to be doing some reconnaissance. This is recon work. I watch Saving Private Ryan. I watch Black Hawk Down. I know what happens in these movies. This is a war, goddammit. You're sending out troops to make sure that the enemy is unprepared. And bro, it was like the fourth time walking down, but this walk was with a bit more intention.
Yeah.
Because the front guy was walking a bit faster and his chest was out and he was just looking straight ahead, bro, at us, basically. And we sit in there and I think it was the reason, I'm not sure what it was, but we both look up, like down the road at the dead end, and they're walking towards us and I look at the reason and the motherfucker in front, he just takes something out and he does this,
yo.
And I look at the reason and I say, my bro, did you see that? And he's like, yeah, I did see that. And he gets up and has to get up. I'm like, oh, okay, so this is happening. I'm not crazy. Anyways, these motherfuckers proceed to stick up some members of our crew here. At first, I didn't know what I was going to do, man, because I was like, shit, I can't run anywhere. Bro. I don't have a car here or some cuck in the middle of Newtown. I know how to get to Hill, bro.
Yeah.
But to run there is going to be a mad mission.
Yeah,
I don't smack for that, bro.
Yeah.
So I checked to myself, yo, I need to arm. I need weapons.
Sure.
Jeez.
How's that my first thought? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm scratching around, and while this is happening, these guys didn't notice me because they went for everybody that moved.
Mm.
Everyone that got up and started walking fast away, that's who their attention was on.
Yeah.
I just stood in the back like, okay, shit, I think this is happening. Okay, let me just... And then, you know, my movements was all small, subtle movements. Yeah. I didn't do big shit, you know what I mean? I didn't scream and cack like that. Because that's how you're going to draw attention to yourself.
Yeah, draw attention.
And my manager at the time, he's with me. He's the only one with me. And we're standing on this this equipment bucket. So they were loading all the lights and the battery packs and the camera equipment. It was all loaded in that Jeep. He's standing in the front of the Jeep. I come to the back. I'm like, yo, I'm going to try and find a light stand or a mic stand.
Yeah.
Just so that when this motherfucker comes to me, I'm like, ha! You know what I mean? I'm just going to swing, bro. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do against a gun, but I'm going to swing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And they don't see me.
Shit.
So he walks up to my manager. He points a gun at him.
Jesus.
He's like, yo, give me your phone. Because we're from the street, my manager already served his phone under the car seat.
Yeah, you know what they're coming for.
We knew what was going to happen.
Because they don't have a bucky. They don't care for the equipment.
No, we're from the fucking, you know, we're from the shit. So we're like, oh, hell no. My man, he hit his shit in the car mat. So they got the gun out at him. I'm standing at the back, and he knows I'm there. My manager knows I'm there, but the assailant don't know that I'm there.
Yeah.
So my manager's talking, but I see him doing this. Like, he's trying to look back to see, like, shit, is this nigga noticing that there's another guy back there?
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm like the golden goose.
Mm.
You don't want anything to happen to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, I got the motherfucking mic stand in my head. I'm like, okay, on the count of three. I'm in the back giving myself pep talks. Because I'm looking, I'm like, shit, he's still there. And I don't want him to come to the back, because I'm like, if he comes to the back, he's going to find me.
Yeah.
I got the mic stand, bro. I'm like, actually, at the time, I didn't know what it was. I thought it was a light stand.
Yeah.
It's actually like that, a mic stand.
Yeah.
Crazy. So I'm standing at the back of the mic stand in my hand. I'm about to come out. I'm like, one, two, three. I come out. The niggas start running.
Sure.
Thinking to myself, no, not you. I'm thinking, huh? Why would he run if he has a gun?
Yeah.
the cops is coming down the road.
Oh.
But they're coming from the other side. I can't see.
Yeah.
So as they're coming up, this motherfucker turned around. And look, the first thought in my mind was when I saw these guys approaching us when I was sitting with the reason, I was like, that gun probably can't be real.
Yeah.
This motherfucker turned around, aim at the cops, and he busts.
And
at that moment, I knew, I could have died.
Yeah, these were serious guys.
Yeah, because if I had to take the fucking thing out,
done,
he might have shot me.
Yeah.
Anyways, I only realized that the gun is real. He runs. So I think to myself, yo, I'm going to get my revenge. This is in my head. I don't know what I was possessed by. I think I'm going to get my revenge. So I chase this nigga with the mic stand. I don't know why, bro, but look, it's also the adrenaline.
Adrenaline, yeah.
Of course. It's not really a rational decision that I made to go chase him, but I just saw him run. Yeah. I chased him. That's it. And as I'm chasing him, he stopped and turned, and he pointed the gun, not at me, but the cops is behind me, and he shoots straight. He shoots straight, bro. So the bullets must have missed me somewhere, or maybe it was just a cock shot. Maybe he just never...
Yeah, generally they can't shoot those
target
guys.
Practice
yeah, those guys can't shoot.
But, yeah, I chased the guy for a little bit, and everybody was shouting like, no, stop. And because everybody dropped when the fucking gun went off except me.
Fuck, bro.
And I carried on running off to this guy thing. I don't know what I thought I was going to do. I was going to be like, this is a hot verse and a video, and you fucking it all up, bitch ass. Yeah, you know, I don't know what I was going to do. But yeah, in my head, but something just possessed me to chase this man. And, you know, he got away. Obviously, the cops didn't do nothing. The cops was like shooting back also.
Yeah.
So the crazy thing was like we were in the middle of this fucking gunfight. It was supposed to be a music video shoot that actually didn't get shot.
That's crazy.
And
bro,
we all survived. Thank God, we all came out unharmed.
Man.
Everybody was just a bit shaken and
stuff.
Other than that, that was an experience in Joburg. That's when I learned in Joburg, like, okay, shit, crime has no time limit, has no age,
and there's no reason for it.
There's no reason for it either.
Because he ran away.
Yeah. I was like, nah, they're just trying their luck in this motherfucker.
Not fuck today, man. Crime.
We got 10 minutes left with you, bro. I feel like we just started the podcast right now. But he's gotta go in 10 minutes because he's a judge on the sports scene thing. Yeah,
put me on, bro.
Yeah.
Put me on.
So before we play a game of One Must Go, which we have to, mandatory, it's part of the show, right? Artist of the Decade. Were you shocked that you got nominated for that at the SA Hip Hop Awards?
Yeah.
The only reason it was surprising to me is because I know the industry politics. I know the way the game is played.
And you don't belong to any clan, bro.
I don't belong to a company or subsidiary or clique or whatever. Yeah. So I already know. By putting me in there, it's an honorable mention, which I am also grateful for. Definitely. I like the fact that I'm being acknowledged. What I'm just confused by is why you would put me in a race you know I can't win.
You're set up for failure.
Thank you.
Well, don't do KO?
That to me. KO, AKA, Casper, Ricky, Rick, Nasty.
Come on.
Please.
Even Nasty's put up there for failure, though.
Please. There is no way you're giving it to Youngster CP. There's no fucking... I don't want to know in what parallel universe you are living in, but it's not the one that I'm living in. So I'm just being realistic. Maybe I lost a summer for 3T, and I won it in the SA Hip Hop Awards for 3T.
Yeah.
So if I couldn't win something as small as a victory that seemed to be in the bag, this is way, way more far-fetched than that.
Yeah.
So I'm just being realistic. It's not a diss, it's not a snub, but I have to be realistic with my expectations in life, which I've done for the past 30 years of my existence. So I'm not going to start now with these optimistic thoughts of like, oh no, the sun's going to come out, the rainbow's going to shine, and they're going to give the trophy to me. Fuck that, man. Just be real.
All right, cool. Let's play One Must Go, right?
I will.
I'm going to give you two rappers and tell me which one must go, right?
Salute.
Sjava, Big Zulu.
I like both of them. I'm going to go with Big Zulu.
Big Zulu must go.
Must go.
No, I'm going to say he must stay.
Oh, he must stay. Java must go.
Yeah, Java must go. Sorry.
Because you haven't worked with him, ne?
Not yet.
Not yet.
It's going to happen, though. It's going to happen.
Hey, but you guys killed Big Zulu on a billion remix, eh?
There was even a shootout that day.
Oh, my goodness.
When we shot
Is there going to be a shootout here? Should we?
When we shot the remix of I'm a Million in Westbury.
Yeah.
In my scene.
Yeah, Westbury.
But how's this? The shooting only took place when I left. So as I was leaving, then the shots took place.
So it seems like you sent the goons.
Not even
or
that.
Out of respect
for you. It
seems
like I was about to say, like in the darkest moment of like, yo, we want to do some crazy shit, but youngsters
told me. Fuck,
exactly. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's have respect, but yeah, it was crazy, bro. It was crazy.
AK, Stogie D.
Stogie the OG, man, bro. He's going to stay.
AK's gotta go.
That's my list. This is my list, bro.
Fuck, when last did you speak to him?
Not too long ago, bro. He's a good man.
Yeah.
He's a good man.
Are you guys ever gonna work again?
Because like yo,
we probably will. Probably will. Look, he's in a good space. I'd say creatively at the moment. Like I saw what he did with Costa. I'm seeing what he did with that. Even that song Tears Run Dry. I actually like that song Tears Run Dry, bro. You know what I mean? But I can see that that musically. He's in a place of creating now because he has a lot to say.
Oh, yes.
He has
a
lot that needs to come out, a lot that needs to be vented. Yeah. And he's doing it in stages.
Yeah.
But I like the way he's doing it. I can see, like, now he's giving us some of the, you know, the sunshine, and he's going to give us his pain eventually when he's ready. Yeah.
And then did it have an impact in your career, like, working with him?
Definitely, bro. I think that was like a World Cup moment.
Wow.
It was kind of like having, like, just imagine Messi and Ronaldo played on the same team. You know what I mean? Like, in Cape Town, I can tell you the impact and the reception was huge. In South Africa, when I started traveling and playing the song and performing it, I could also see the reception was huge. And even the response in that music video, like, I know he dropped Free and Maino was on the same day.
Yeah.
And he told me the reason for that was, you know, his strat that he works with is like, he does one for the mainstream, like for radio, and he does one for the streets.
For the streets,
you know?
Yeah.
And the way it felt, and it seemed also to me, like just based on the visuals that we released and the song's impact, is that the one for the street kind of surpassed the mainstream one.
Yeah,
you know? And he had Tira on that, he had Ricky Rick on that. He sampled, like, My Feelings For You Will Always Be Free. It's like a big house track, you know what I'm saying? And still, like, just that joining of this two, you know, big, you know, colored entities, so to say, because the one is more like Joburg based, the other one is straight Kapstadt. But it's from the same, you know, it's kind of from the same cloth.
Yeah.
And the fact that they met for once, like at least halfway, and it actually worked. You know, sometimes you put two artists together that's big, the song don't always come out.
Yeah, it doesn't land sometimes.
Like, people want Nasty and Ari so badly to make a song. I'm thinking, like, shit, we just need to enjoy what it's like to not have them on a song yet. So we will appreciate the song more when they make it, because people's going to expect maybe a club song or some heavy lyrical track, and we don't know what they're going to do. Yeah. We don't know where they're going to go with it, you know? So it's just, let it happen organically, because me and AK know each other for a long time in my career, but only after, like, 8 years, 9 years, did we make a song?
Damn, shit.
But he knew about me all those years, every time he came to Cape Town, you know? So it's kind of like just patience, you know? Things take time.
Speaking about Aries Nasty C, which one must go? And I'm talking about lyrical, because you're lyrical maestro.
Ish.
Lyrically.
It's a tough one.
Not mainstream.
It is a tough one.
Yeah.
Because both of them motherfuckers spit, man. Both of them spit.
And you've worked with both of them, ne?
No, not Aries.
Not Aries, yeah.
So for now, I'm going to say Nasty can go. Only because Nasty got enough. Nasty's alright.
He's good.
Nasty's alright.
Yeah.
Hey, he still have like this underdog quality about
him.
He's still like proving himself every time he drops. So I mean, that kind of attitude, that is like a certain hunger that only certain rappers also possess. You know what I mean? I'm not saying Nasty not hungry anymore, but he also knows he's powerful at this point. Zulu man with some power. So he knows, you know, he knows. But my man Rhys, I think he needed more.
Yeah.
You know, not saying that he's not well off, but I just feel like in terms of the industry, they haven't truly given him his dues yet.
Yeah.
Not yet. He has a cult following, which is very, very dope. So that's going to make any rapper stand up and salute him. You know, because he has a core audience. So on the days that he fucks up, that core audience is behind him. On the day he goes platinum, that core audience is behind him. He hasn't peaked yet, bro. So I'm going to give it to Riz just because we still have to see where he's going to go with this shit.
Last one. These are two guys he did a track with. Blackie, Big Hash. New Wave. Is that New Wave? Yeah, I love both of them, bro.
I also love both of
them. Oh, man. Have you heard the Big Hash and Tsekho?
No,
palm trees.
Palm trees.
Yeah, I thought you were gonna say a new song. I was like, fuck, am I misinformed? I'm in Joburg, bro. How did I miss that one? Look, I'm gonna go with Big Hash.
Must go.
No, he must stay.
Must stay. Blackie must go.
Blackie's all right. This is one of those cases. Once again, you're putting him against somebody who had one of the best years in a pandemic.
Yeah.
Who, Blackie?
Blackie. Yeah, definitely Blackie.
I like to classify some of them as lockdown rappers. And I only say that because the climb and the incline comes at the end of like 2019 into 2020.
Oh, yeah.
From 2020 then onwards.
Yeah.
So their fame is only realized during this time of COVID.
Of course.
Which is cuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Because just imagine, yeah, at Cotton Fest. Thank you.
Carnage.
Anthem.
Carnage.
Crowd anthem.
Yeah.
But we're not going to see that yet.
Yeah.
We have to wait for the world to go back to normal. So that's why I say, like, in terms of success rate, I mean, Blackie has just proven that it's not about lockdown, it's not about the pandemic, it's not about the restrictions, it's not about COVID. If you're art, you're art.
Yeah,
you know, whereas Big Hash, similar to Aries, still has to, you know, give us the full package. You know, so we're gonna wait and see.
So I'm confused. Who must go?
Blackie must go.
But you just said he had a dope beer.
Indeed, that's why I don't need to stay.
Hey, he's good, eh?
Yeah. He's got good. You, dog. You got your match.
Did you see them grills?
He's just breezing through these things.
Look at
bro.
The grills. He's all right.
Before you go, we got to talk about the album. That's why we're here, man.
No doubt.
I love the title, bro.
Dreams don't pay bills.
Eish.
Don't be lazy. That's what the, you know, that's kind of what it sums up.
You got Ready D up in there.
I got Ready D and Emil on a song together. Like, guys, you understand, for Cape Town, just imagine featuring, I don't know, the Zola and fucking Funati. Prokidawe or some shit, like, you know what I mean? Like, that big. That's who those guys are in Cape Town. You know, that's the status that they have. And like I said about the name, I just don't want people to think that all rappers are blacky. Basically, we didn't all have a good year. Some of us had shit years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, some I can name a few.
So, you know, some of us actually had to rebuild.
Yeah.
Some of us lost a lot in the fire. You know, some of us got looted. Some of us got broken. You know what I mean? So the title came in that time. I mean, I've had the title written on my desk for 9 years. The title only made sense to me now because I was like, shit, I got a shop, I got staff, I got overheads, I got expenses.
Bro.
I have so many things in 2020. Yeah, in 2020 that I didn't have in the other years because my shop only came in 2019. I've been trading 9 months in a normal working fiscal year.
And these fuckers decide
to. And then 2 years in COVID. So I make fun and say, yeah, they lock down rappers. I got a lockdown business.
Museums are locking down, closing, so many businesses.
So it was very, very difficult for me as a businessman, as an artist, to decide which hat is more important to wear right now, which hat takes priority, which hat takes preference now, because I have a business, but I'm also a musician. So must I make music in this time when shit's going wrong, or must I try and keep the lights on here and go quiet a little bit just to, you know, suffice and make sure that I'm going to be okay and my family's going to be okay and my homies and everyone that's given up their lives for me is going to be all right. Yeah. You know, so it was difficult, but Dreams Don't Pay Bills is just something that I want people to kind of like use as a mantra almost. Like, just say it to yourself. Just know that every time you get out of bed, yo, the dreams aren't going to pay the bills. That was a nice little 8 hours or 5 hours, however long you sleep for. That was nice to be there in that fantasy world, but it's not real. When I walk out the door, that's where it counts. That's where the dream counts. That's where I make the dream come true, you know?
Yeah. Right. I remember we had a Slick Talk on our show. And him, myself, and him were saying, bear in mind, I'm not a hip-hop head, so I could be speaking out of school. But we were saying, like, lyrically, fuck, you are amazing. One of the best.
Untouchable.
Untouchable, but we feel like you still need to have your own ngut.
Yes.
That translates to the mainstream.
I understand where you're going with this. Look, the thing you also have to be aware of is I'm speaking from a culture that not everyone is aware of. I'm speaking in a language half this population don't understand.
Oh, yeah.
I'm coming from a place that obviously the greater South Africa has a little bit of a grudge against because of the shit that took place there. So I come with a smudge on my name. I'm Muslim, so I can't entertain a lot of the shit that most rappers can.
Alcohol.
It's all haram.
It's all haram. But hey, look, tattoos, rap game.
That's my crew.
Smoking weed, like all.
My crew.
I'm still doing, like, you know, shit I'm not supposed to. But
so hip hop light.
No caffeine. No caffeine.
Yeah.
But healthier. It's like not smoking cigarettes, but you're doing tobacco.
Yeah. My crew.
I'm the tobacco. You understand? I give you the same effect with less of the hazards.
Yeah.
So because of all those things, look, I'm not making excuses why I don't have those songs. But in my career, the songs that kind of did that for me, which is not on the same level as those tracks, but songs like Yassas. That song was big for me.
Yes.
A West Cap, coming from the West Cap, West Coast. You know, like, that was big for me. And then a lot of the features I did, the Main O's one, the one with Nasty, the one with Questa, the one with Shane Eagle now recently, the Ammo. So, yes, I didn't maybe have like that monumental one, but I have like six that equaled the one monumental one. And
it's
I
not
don't
to say that it's not coming.
Indeed.
Nah, it's gonna come, bro.
Indeed. And also, like, I'm not taking away from those songs because everybody's path and journey is different.
Love
I'm
you.
Not, I'm not looking for maybe a good or Agusheshe, if it comes by itself just because I was passionate about the songs and music, hey, great.
You weren't chasing it.
But if I have to sit in the studio and apply myself, it's not going to come.
Yeah. You're chasing.
It's not going to come. Chasing, so I'd rather have it happen naturally instead for me. You know?
Bro, your management team, they like, hey, it's time to wrap up.
Yo,
lovely. Keep them on their toes, Jay. Keep them on their fucking toes, mate.
But before you go, we always ask our guests, right, to tell us what they want to be remembered as. But I'm not going to ask you that, because I think we need a part two of this. And Kaiicha in Cape Town.
Are you going
to
come?
Yeah, when we came to Cape Town the first time, I tried to get rid of you. I'm not rid of you.
That's what we see, youngster. Chillers, there you have it. That's what we need to be, youngster.
You heard what this nigga said. Phone calls need to be made. We need to pay for some flights out here.
I try to get hold of them for the show and
then fuck them.
Bro, every time we go to Cape Town, we go to Lonely places. We're at V&A.
Yes.
We want to come for you. We want to go to the heart of Cape Town.
I was about to say that, and that's why you're a great podcaster, because you already anticipate these things.
So we're going to have a part two. I'm not going to ask you that question.
Salute.
However, I'll ask you one thing. Because I've seen you perform. I've never seen any artist in SA do this. And I don't know if it's planned, but it's fucking remarkable. You know what he does?
What does he do?
He goes on stage and he asks people, like, give me a name, give me a name. And he raps on the spot.
This is a proper MC.
Can you do that for us?
Oh, wait.
All right, cool. Let's go with Saul. Give him a name.
I'll start
with me, yeah?
Okay.
Pussy.
God damn.
So what's your word?
That's the respect.
My word is hypothesis.
Hypothesis. Pussy hypothesis. Tabang.
Money.
Fresh.
Just type these things down.
Okay,
so you see, them, put them on 80 font so he sees them.
Let me tell
there.
You the difference Pussy. Between your words and the audience. So the audience, by the time I do this part of the show, they are gesaped.
Oh yeah,
they are fucking hammered, bro. They're gonna all give me like whack words, like say banana. Okay, that's a good idea.
You say I'm what else?
So that's cool. I used to come here hypothesis. I mean, oh shit.
Yeah, I'm sober, bro.
Einstein over here.
Here we go. So it's pussy hypothesis, money,
who fresh.
Hey!
Conglomerate!
Ah, no, don't do that, bro.
No, conglomerate.
Okay. Conglomerate.
Hey, that's mash, by the way.
I can't even spell it, bro.
That's mash.
Conglomerate.
I love it.
Yes. Orange. Aye.
Orange.
This motherfucker been Googling. He's like, what words can he not
rhyme? Yeah, can he not rhyme? You know you can rhyme orange, bro.
Orange.
All right, cool. You got the words? Must you say them one more time?
Now I'm there.
Can you see them? Okay.
Wait, now you're going to give me a beatbox.
Can you do a beatbox? Yeah, he'll do the beatbox.
That's right. There's no telling what the topic is. The name is Youngster. You know there's no stopping him. And when it comes to this shit, I'm like the Dr. King. Yes, indeed, bro. This is my hypothesis. Ah, and I do it from the top. When it comes to freestyle, this is the best hip-hop. And I told you before that I represent the West. If you need some shit off your chest, then rather drink Schweppes. And yes, indeed, bro. I bust it all on the mic. I'm so cold, like I just swallowed whole ice. And you know how it goes. Please, bro, do not push me. Because just like that, you'll turn into a wet pussy. Yeah, when I put my finger inside, the name is Youngster, represented the Generation Y. And you know how it goes, bro. Yes, that line was funny. But you fuck with me, I'm gonna steal your money. Just like the government, I will never stop. I done told you before, a Jordan's not flip-flops. But when freestyles drop, then the words are always prominent. That's why I gen to the end. Respect my conglomerate. I'm never ever gonna fumble. The name is Youngster. I came through for the hustle. And where does it go? These words are not from college, but you thought that I couldn't never rhyme shit with Ari. And I still did. The name is Youngster, and you know they hate the kid. But after this, bro, I will lay it to rest. Cause the last word on your laptop is who fresh.
Okay. And he's out.
Woo! We are here, man. Podcast.
Part two coming. Part two coming.
Fuck, man. Oh, what an exit. Oh, wow. Thank you, bro.
To advertise, email podcast@thisismechi.com.
Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Matt G.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.